Welcome to the Embryo Adoption Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Mellinger. On this show, we explore the possibilities embryo adoption offers to families often struggling with infertility, though not always. Through insightful interviews and moving stories, we uncover the blessings of this unique path to parenthood. This podcast is brought to you by the National Embryo Donation Center, giving hope to those longing to grow their families. Now, let's get started. An embryo adoption journey of lasting joy and honestly some lingering disappointment. That's what we're talking about with NEDC mom Jenna Bieber today. And Jenna, let's start at the beginning. Tell me how you and Brian, your husband, first got together. It sounds almost creepy at first blush, but it's really not.
Yeah, that's an accurate description. So when we were in college, I ended up going to school at Shippensburg University, which actually is the home area of Brian's hometown. So he grew up in Carlisle, PA, and that's like 20 minutes from Shippensburg. And so I ended up meeting a lot of people at Shippensburg that he knew growing up in you know, elementary, middle school, high school. And so he went to the University of Pittsburgh. And when he was home from classes for winter break, he had a friend over his house. And this friend actually was a mutual friend of ours now. I mean, we didn't know that at the time, but so this friend I had classes with at SHIP, and he had my Facebook page pulled up while he was at Brian's house. And Brian happened to see it and he saw my picture and he was like, oh, who are you talking to? Who's that? And so our mutual friend messaged me and he was like, my friend Brian thinks that your beauty is more than the sun and the moon combined. You should text him. And like any normal, rational person, my immediate response was like, no, I'm not going to do that. That person sounds super weird. But for some reason, and I honestly say like, clearly it was a God nudge to, for whatever reason, I decided, okay, why not? Let's just text this person. Oh, and to be clear, Brian never said that. He was like, I never said anything like that.
He didn't the sun and moon comment. This was friend taking liberties.
That's correct. So it wasn't as weird as it initially sounded. So I texted him and the rest is kind of history from there. We hit it off and we started talking and I like to say we never stopped talking. So.
Well, he's a terrific guy. Obviously, you guys going through the NEDC, I've met him several times. Terrific guy. And, you get married eventually. You thought you'd just have kids naturally like everyone else seems to. But explain how infertility interrupted that dream.
Yeah, we were planners. We like to think about things logically and, you know, create a schedule for ourselves. And so we kind of thought of our lives that way too. We thought, okay, we'll get married. We'll get settled for a few years, get a little bit more financially stable, get a house, get secure in our jobs. And then maybe in 5 years after we've done what we want to do and we feel good about it, then we'll start trying. And then of course we thought we'll get pregnant immediately. And then our life plan will go from there and we'll have X number of kids. And you know, in our minds, it was going to be boom, boom, boom. And to be fair, you know, up to that point, everything in our lives had pretty much gone that way. Anything we set our sights on doing, we made a plan and we did it. And so we had no reason to think that having children would be any different. But when we came up to that 5-year mark, we started trying and quickly we realized that it wasn't going to go as planned because initially when I stopped taking birth control, I wasn't ovulating. And you need to ovulate in order to get pregnant. So right away I was like, okay, well, there's going to be some bumps here, but you know, we can work through this. And we started seeing, you know, I was working with my OBGYN and eventually it got to the point where she had to prescribe fertility medication to induce ovulation. And that was about 6 months after we had been trying, well, waiting really.
Right.
And so when we got to that point, the medication worked great. And she was like, okay, so if you're not pregnant within 6 months of taking this medication, you know, stats say that really we should be by that point. Then we would refer you to a reproductive specialist. And so I was like, okay, great. We got it. We fixed it. Problem solved. We're good to go. Now we can move on. We wasted some time. That's unfortunate, but we're still close to our timeline. But I will say, while I had that thought, I also like always had this tension of thinking, I don't know if this is going to work for us. And I don't know if it was just because, I had experienced that now initially, that like maybe it wasn't going to always work out the way I thought it was going to. I don't know if that was just sort of lingering in my mind, or if it really was kind of like a God like preparing me mentally a little bit for, okay, this isn't going to go the way you think it's going to go. I don't know, but I held both of those things in tension, like thinking like, okay, well now the problem's fixed, we're good to go, but also, but I don't know, this still might not work for some reason. I felt that way. And it didn't work. We tried for 6 months and nothing happened. And it was a very stressful 6 months, tracking, all of the ovulation, the basal body temperature, just like trying to keep everything in line and giving everything the perfect chance to get pregnant. And it didn't work. Month after month, it was really disappointing because I had to actually call my doctor to get the next month's prescription of the ovulation medication. So that was really hard every single month to have to make that call and say, oh, I didn't get pregnant, so I need another prescription. I don't know why they wouldn't just give you 6 months at a time, but I'm not a doctor.
Right. No, that'd be very, very difficult, right?
it really was. So after 6 months, we then got set up with a reproductive specialist and went through all of the testing that they would normally do, the blood work. I had an HSG. Well, I think it was at that point. At some point along the line, I had an HSG, various testing for me. And finally, at that point, they said, okay, we should also have a semen analysis for your husband.
Right.
And after like what was almost over a year of just things for me, testing for me, medication for me, thinking that I was the reason that we weren't getting pregnant, we kind of thought that the analysis for Brian was really just like a formality, like check the box and that'll be fine, and then we move on from there. And then what we ultimately found out was that it was not fine, and we were experiencing male factor infertility. And we learned ultimately that we would not get pregnant naturally without any, we needed IVF, and we needed IVF with ICSI in particular because of the very low sperm count. So, that was really devastating to find out, especially after thinking one way for like a year, thinking that it was probably something we could overcome, to realizing very quickly in an instant, like, we can't fix this. There's literally nothing we can do apart from a miracle, or if we go with IVF with ICSI, like that's it.
And that's those are like two extremes, and you guys are very serious about your faith, and certainly we're not saying that people of faith can't do IVF with ICSI. I think believers in good standing have different views on that issue, and that's fine. We'll allow them to have different views on that issue, but you guys did want to draw boundaries. How did you determine, you wanted a baby so bad, but there were certain boundaries that you wouldn't cross. How did you determine what the boundaries were? How did your faith play a role in that?
We felt from the beginning, I will say that to start, we always just kind of had an uneasy feeling about IVF. And I don't even know why we really thought about it. Like before we realized we were having issues getting pregnant, it maybe had come up occasionally, when you're thinking about having children, maybe you talk about those things randomly, not with any real intentionality. But we sort of always had this uneasy feeling about IVF for us. And we kind of in our minds were like, yeah, that's not really something we're going to do. And then when we realized that was the only option that we had to have biological children, I like to say that like you create these lines and these boundaries, but you think that you're never going to actually come up against those boundaries, and then you do, and then you're like, oh, well, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I should move the line. Maybe I should make a different boundary, because if this is the only way that we can get what we want to get, then obviously this is what I have to do, right? Like there's no other option. But we had just felt that that sense of like, that's not for us. And we also felt convicted that we wanted to pursue treatments that would help our bodies to function optimally, but not remove the marriage bed from the equation of conception. So that's why I felt comfortable taking ovulation medication, because that's what my body's supposed to do. And so the fact that it wasn't was something that I was fine with using medicine to correct. But we just felt, for us personally, a conviction that we didn't want to remove God's design for conception and children from our personal, like, expanding our family. And I say that knowing that that's not everybody's story and that's not everybody's choice. And I think, you know, everyone has to, specifically people that are following God's design for their life and what God is, you know, laying on their hearts, they need to be really careful and intentional about being obedient to what God is telling them. So not everybody's story is the same as mine. There's a lot of gray in infertility, and you really need to be discerning and seek out the Lord's wisdom in scripture. But for us, we did truly feel like removing the marriage bed was not something we wanted to do. And so we didn't want to pursue IUI, which we found, you know, wasn't even an option for us, but we didn't want to pursue IUIs. We didn't want to pursue IVF with ICSI. And we did not want to pursue any sort of, like, you know, sperm donor, egg donor. Like, that's not what we wanted to do for our family. So that's how we sort of came to the decision of, well, we're either going to not have children then and not expand our family with kids, or we're going to adopt, because we wanted to have a child that was either both of our genetics or none of our genetics. And that's the decision we came to.
How did embryo adoption come onto your radar?
That's a fun story. So going through the infertility journey, again, I said, I'm a planner. I'm a very type A person. I was looking at all the resources, you know, looking for every podcast I could find, every blog, every Instagram person that was sharing about their fertility journey. Like, I was trying to just find all of the resources and information. And specifically, I was looking for biblical perspectives on infertility. And so one of the podcasts that I was listening to, it was called Joy and Infertility, hosted by Kaylee Porter. She had a story on there where one of her guests actually had gone through IVF and they had remaining embryos and they donated them to the NEDC. And then she was talking about how the adoptive family has a child or had a child at the time through that process. And she was saying things like, you know, it's crazy because their son looks like our son because they're biological siblings. And, you know, this was my first exposure to this concept of embryo adoption. And I was very intrigued. And I was just blown away by that even being a thing, like a possibility. And, you know, it was also like, it was odd. I was like, this is weird.
Yeah, it is. I mean, at first blush, it sure is.
Yeah. But I was definitely interested. And at that time, when I was listening to that, we didn't know why we weren't getting pregnant. We weren't that far in our journey yet. It was just an episode that had come up because I was listening to like every episode. and I was like, okay, well, that's interesting. We'll tuck that away. And I mentioned it to Brian at the time. And I was like, hey, I heard about this thing. And his initial response was way more hesitant and way more skeptical than mine was. He was like, no, that's really weird. yeah. And I was like, okay, well, you know, that's fine. We're like, we're not really going down that route. You know, we're still where we are, so it's fine. And then when we found out that we wouldn't be able to have biological children, I say this when I share the story, but I say this all the time because I remember it so distinctly, literally sitting there in the room when they were telling us this information, we found out about the male factor infertility. I had like a flash of the embryo adoption in my mind. Like as they were explaining that IVF with ICSI was our only option, blah, blah, blah. It just like flashed in my mind. I was like, embryo adoption. And it wasn't something that Brian and I had continued to talk about after that point. Like, it had probably been months since I had listened to that podcast and we, you know, initially discussed it and then we let it go. Like, it wasn't a point of discussion at that point. So the fact that it just quickly came back into my mind, I was like, okay. And it honestly was at that point where I kind of in my mind had already made the decision that I was like, we're not doing whatever the doctor is telling us about IVF. Like, it's not happening. I think I know what we're going to do. And I don't know, maybe that's the fixer in me, the type A, where I was like, okay, problem, got a solution. But I do think God had planted a seed months ago. And he really clearly brought that to mind in like one of the darkest, darkest moments of my husband's and my marriage, you know, like figuring this out about our future, that everything we thought was coming to a halt and our expectations were like crumbling around us. Like he brought this redemptive thought in like one of those darkest moments of, I have a plan for you, trust me, and brought embryo adoption to mind.
How did Brian get to yes? And why did you choose the NEDC?
Yeah, Brian, when I talked to him, you know, obviously we did a lot of processing, but a lot of conversation about, okay, well then what do we do next? Because once you have that grief, you know, you're still working through it, but you do have to decide, okay, well, what is next? Like, are we going to just not do anything? Are we going to consider adoption? Are we going to consider embryo adoption? So when we began to talk about our options and what we wanted our life to look like, or what we hoped it would look like. And, you know, we really felt a strong call to be parents still. You know, we said we had an open home, you know, we had an open heart for parenting. We really felt that we wanted to expand our family and bring children into our lives. We wanted to go on that adventure together. And we felt that we didn't want to just stop and not have any children. So when we were talking about adoption versus embryo adoption, it just sort of became, embryo adoption just sort of became the thing that brought both of us peace. And as we really talked about it, prayed about it, thought about it, that just seemed to us to be our next right step. And, you know, we've said like, we weren't closed off to traditional adoption, but for us, that just didn't feel like the right move, like that God wanted for our story. And so we just sort of both came to that peace. So he came to a yes. Like it wasn't like a big thing. It wasn't like a hard struggle. We just sort of had peace about it. And then we ultimately went with the NEDC because when I had listened to that podcast, you know, it was that person had donated their embryos to the NEDC. So that was obviously kind of the first organization in my mind related to embryo adoption. But when I looked at the NEDC's website, like I just honestly felt like I was at home. And like, I don't really know how to describe that feeling other than just feeling like peace, comfort, you know, feeling like it was very clear that the NEDC cares for patients, cares for embryos, and is approaching all of this from a biblical perspective and with intentionality, with thought. And it just was very evident even from the website. And I didn't honestly ever really consider any other option. Like we didn't look at other agencies because, you know, once we felt that sense of like, wow, this seems like a beautiful place doing a beautiful redemptive work and really stewarding the lives of these embryos and caring for patients and people that are walking through these really hard things. Like that was the starting point for us. And then like to learn even more about the fact that it's such a comprehensive program, you know, the embryos are stored on site, like you guys have been doing this for a long time. Like all of those things were just adding up to being like the obvious choice. Like, yes, this is where we are going to go.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, we do see it as redemptive work, a rescue mission of sorts for the embryos. And we love meeting the adults who God can help through our organization as well. It's a blessing. So describe how your journey through the NEDC unfolded then.
Yeah. We applied in like basically like a month after we found out what our situation was. We applied and went through the whole application process. And I remember it seemed very overwhelming at the beginning. But one of the things I loved about working with NEDC was that you all have like a very comprehensive step-by-step, like walking you through the process. And I always was telling people that you don't have to know like the whole journey. The NEDC will walk with you step by step. And whatever is coming next, they will help you get to that point and you'll be ready for it. And then when you get to that point, they'll help you with what's next. And so that's what I loved, because my personality, like I needed like a game plan. And the NEDC was fantastic with walking through what is a very long and like can be very overwhelming process. So when we did the application process, we went through all the home study and all the approvals and all of the, you know, blood draws and the testing and all of that. And then, you know, we came down to Tennessee in January of 2020 for our initial appointment and did the trial transfer, and all of that went great. And also like left that appointment feeling like even more at peace with the decision, because after meeting all of you in person, it was just like, yeah, this place is doing something really special. And we're excited for what God's writing into our story, that we get to be part of what's happening here. And then we matched very quickly. I was under the old matching system, so I don't know anything about the new matching system.
Oh, yes. You were pre-database, right?
Yes. I was the PDF zip file.
I am so glad we have. It's nice that you're saying nice things about us, having gone through that antiquated system that they were doing back in the Little House on the Prairie days.
Yeah.
You know, thankfully we've upgraded since then, but God was at work through your matching the files with probably Krista and Kathy at that time.
Yeah. So we matched through those, and that was a crazy process. Like, but I mean, you're right. God was in it. God was working. And like, he really clearly brought us to our matching family. And when we matched, it was actually really cool, because that family, you know, obviously the donor families have to choose you back. And our donor family had, unfortunately for the other families, but fortunately for us, denied a couple other people because they just didn't feel like it was the right fit. And I think that was amazing, because like, it was clear that God brought us together. Like, they had other options at other times in the year before we kind of came along, and God waited, and you know, he brought us together, and we're so thankful for that. And then we had our first transfer in May of 2020. And we adopted a family of 6 embryos, I should say. So they were, I think there was 1 blastocyst and 5 multicell. And we transferred 2 in May of 2020, and we got pregnant with our son, Remington. We lost the other embryo. That embryo went straight home to Jesus, but we got pregnant with Remy on the first transfer, which was really exciting for us. And yeah, so now we have him, and he's 3, just turned 3. And that's fun. And so after we had him, we were, you know, we had 4 remaining embryos, and we did feel like we really did want, biological siblings from, you know, we wouldn't have adopted a family of 6 embryos if we didn't hope to have biological siblings. And so, we went back for our next transfer in September, after Remy had been born in January of 2021. We went back in September. So pretty quick turnaround.
Right.
Yeah. But you know, we like to say we're not getting any younger, so we wanted to keep this moving. So we went back and we transferred the blastocysts at that time. And unfortunately, that embryo also went straight home to Jesus, was not successful. And then we transferred 2 more in December of that year. And we were pregnant. 1 embryo we lost, the other one we were pregnant with. And I carried baby Cherry, we call her, for 9 weeks. And then she went home to Jesus as well. So we had a miscarriage in January of 2022. So yeah, like so Remy hard. Was born in January of 2021. And then January 2022, we had a miscarriage. Yeah, it was rough.
Just a whirlwind. I mean, this whole journey was a whirlwind. Yeah, so you adopt this, or you reserve this set of 6 embryos thinking, you know, in all likelihood, we're going to have more than one child, and you don't. I mean, this is still something. And by the way, by the time this podcast posts, people will be able to read your written thoughts on this on the personal stories section of our mm-hmm. website. That will be out. You expressed it so well. You're a very, very good writer. But put it into words here how hard that was, and honestly, to some degree, continues to be. I mean, I think it's valuable to hear that, because I think you also have encouragement for other embryo adoption families, and they do exist, who are in your shoes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, when we adopted a family of six embryos, we did it with the intention of having biological siblings for Remy. We never planned to be an only child family. And when we had our miscarriage, it was devastating because, I mean, it would be devastating on its own, but like this process is so intense and requires so much of you that, you know, when we finally felt like, okay, like it's happening, we're getting a biological sibling, like our new plan is coming together. You know, our first plan didn't work. We didn't have biological children. That's fine. We're good with this story. We love this. We love Remy. But our new plan is working. We're going to have a sibling for Remy. We're going to be the family we envisioned. And so when that didn't happen, it was like extremely confusing and devastating and heartbreaking. And I will say too, like at the time we knew we still had one embryo left, and then we did go back and that transfer was also not successful. And
right,
that was
right.
Our embryos at that,
that
point.
Was it.
So, yeah, that was it. So we felt like, you know, there was loss with baby Cherry. At that point, we still had a little bit of hope, thinking, okay, well, we still have one left. Maybe that's going to be the, you know, ribbon, the bow on this story. But unfortunately, it was not. And it was very difficult to process because on the one hand, we've come from the infertility thing where we're not part of the infertility crew anymore. You know, we have a son, we have a child. But we're also not experiencing the same family that we envisioned and the same experience that it seems like so many other families get to experience. And right. Then I feel like it's extra hard for embryo adoption families because it's such a unique path. And so there's already a smaller number of people that have your story. And then when you see those embryo adoption families getting to have multiple children and having biological children, like siblings that are related to one another, and they get to have that experience, it's really hard because I carry this guilt that Remy will never experience that. He has biological siblings out there in the world, but they're not in our family. And I feel sad still that he won't get to experience that. And his story, I wanted for him and then a biological sibling to be able to share that together, to be able to have each other and know that you are both, or, you know, three, how many ever there were going to be, like you are all part of our family and you all share this unique story together of where you came from. And now you're with us. And like, this is beautiful and redemptive and we can walk you through this together. And you have someone who gets you and knows your exact situation. And so I feel sad that won't ever happen for Remy. And it's obviously, I think time helps. I, you know, it's not something I'm sad about every single day, but I think that in new seasons, it's going to hit me in new ways because he's three. So he's not quite old enough to really understand or be asking about siblings yet. Like it's not quite there. Sometimes when we're reading and he'll see families have like two kids or three kids or whatever in like our books, he'll ask who they are because he only has the picture of he's the only child. There's a mom and a dad and there's a Remy. And so sometimes when we look at books and there's like two kids, he'll be like, who's that? And I'll be like, well, that person has, you know, a brother or sister. They both have the same mom and dad. So we're getting to that point, but he hasn't, you know, he doesn't understand it yet. But I do know that when he does come to the point of saying, like, will I have a brother or sister? That's going to open up a whole new wave of like emotions and, you know, sadness and grief. But I think what I've come to learn is that you just have to take those things one day at a time. Like, I can't plan for how to feel or respond to him about those things. I have to trust that God's going to give me the grace and the, you know, the emotional stability to work through those things as they come. So I have to trust God on a day-by-day basis that he will prepare me, he will sustain me. And even though it's not what we would have planned, that his ways are always better and that he is always faithful and he's always good and he doesn't change. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And so if I believe that God is good, then I believe that God is good, no matter what my family situation has ended up looking like. And I don't know why. I don't know why we didn't get to expand our family. And I may never know. I probably will never know.
You probably won't.
Yeah. I just have to trust that, you know, that's okay. I'm not meant to know. God is still working in our story. God still has a plan for us. He still sees us. He still knows us. He still has good for us. I don't know how it all works together, but he does. And I just have to trust that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm a big Tim Keller guy. I should be. I worked for him for several years. You know, and he would, growing up in evangelicalism, you know, a common phrase that you would hear, and it was well-meaning, was, you know, God loves you and has a wonderful plan for your life. And you know, Tim made the point, no, that's actually not, yes, he loves you. And right. In a sense, yes, he has a wonderful plan. But in the sense that most people hear that phrase, God may not have a wonderful plan right. for your life. And that the life you envisioned, the life you would ideally want for yourself, may never come true this side of yeah. heaven. And what you have to accept is that someday your life's going to be great. Someday it's going to be great. And he is building something in you through this because he sees the other side of the tapestry. You don't. He's building something better than you could have wanted for yourself if you knew the whole story. So you just have to trust him with the bigger picture. But that is extremely, extremely tough.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying others in your shoes have to do. It's yes, God has blessed you with a wonderful life in a lot of ways, but it's not the life that you envisioned, that you and Brian envisioned even, you know, a couple of years ago, 3 years right. ago.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like I've had to come to terms with the fact that God has his revealed will and God has his sovereign will. So, you know, his revealed will is obviously, it's not brokenness. It's not despair. It's not hopelessness. That's not God's revealed will for us. He clearly loves us and has brought us hope in his son, Jesus, and our redemption. But his sovereign will and the hidden will that we don't get to see behind the curtain, you know, he allows and then ordains things in our lives that we're not going to know this side of eternity why that's the way it is. But again, I hold on to, he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He is always good and he's always working for our good and for ultimately his glory. That's the point. And I like what you said too, like, yeah, this things are going to be good at some point, but really what I hold to is, you know, our eternal good. And that's what I have to keep coming back to is, and I say to myself, and I would encourage other people in this situation where their family building hasn't gone as they've expected, to continue to say, it won't matter someday. Like someday it won't. I know it matters a lot right now. I know it hurts a lot right now. But the truth is, this is like a flash in the pan, this life, you know, this is temporary. And it's we are going to be fully restored, fully made whole, fully complete when we spend our eternity with our good Father. And all of these embryos that we didn't get to meet or the family, like they'll be there and they will be fully restored and fully healed and fully complete. And that's like a hope that I have to hold on to. And I would encourage other people to keep coming back to. It maybe doesn't feel easy to sit with that. And, you know, because this what you feel is the here and now. But the truth is, like, it's temporary. And our eternity is coming, and it's going to be beautiful.
I love how you said it. So, someday it won't matter. And yeah, you may not always feel that, but it is so helpful to remind yourself of that truth. And boy, that doesn't just go through infertility or shattered dreams of what your family would look like. I mean, that truth can get the Christian believer through anything, because it is true. Someday the hard stuff will be gone, and God is glad to erase it from our lives. He's at work doing that right now. Let's end it on a happy note. tell me about Remy, how he's changed you, grown you even closer to God. He's really in love with trash. I love you wrote a lot about that when you told us about him in your written piece.
Yeah, he really is. He loves trash. I don't know where it came from. No, Remy is fantastic. And I know every parent says that about their kids. I know, but like, he is just an amazing kid. He's so funny. And I love seeing this start to come out of him, because now that he is like 3 and hitting that toddler stride, like, his personality, I feel like I say it every time I tell someone, like, his personality is really starting to come out, but like, it is more and more. And so he's so funny, and he's just so smart, super observant, loves to learn about the world around him. It's funny, like, we'll talk about things to him just in the, you know, in the spirit of teaching him new things. We'll talk about things very transparently. Like, we talked about rumble strips on the road the other day. Like, Brian's wheel hit the rumble strip a little bit, and Remy was like, "What's that sound?" And so we explained the whole concept of a rumble strip. And then when you tell him something like that, he wants to hear it over and over. He's like, "Talk about it again. Talk about the rumble strip again." And he'll do that with all kinds of things. So he's super inquisitive, loves to learn about the world and how things work. And we love sharing that with him. It's exciting to see him get those things and learn and light up. Yes, he does love trash, loves trash a lot. Anything trash cans, trash trucks. Just, we have blankets, we have toys, we have YouTube videos. But he's just got his own little personality, and we love it. So he's really like just a light in our lives, and he really brings us a lot of joy, a lot of laughter, and a lot of sanctification.
yes.
That is, yeah, I mean, everyone says, like, you don't really know until you are a parent, like, what it's like to be a parent. When, and it's true. I mean, there's nothing that compares to that experience. It, like, the highs and the lows and the joys and the, like, confusion and the day in, day out, like, of routine with, you know, cleaning up Cheerios and putting away the trash trucks, but also like talking about rumble strips and seeing how exciting that is for him. It's just like an adventure. And I think God is really, really working in our lives and changing us to look more and more like Jesus through our parenting to Remy, which is great, because I need sanctification. I need help.
Yeah. Well, we all do. Okay, let me end it here. I wasn't planning on asking you this, but I will, just out of curiosity. Is the door totally closed for the future to adding any more children to your family?
You know, I will say at this time, yes, the door is closed, but I am never going to like step on what God's telling me. So like, if God is laying it on Brian's heart and my heart to go back to pursue something, whether it would be embryo adoption or traditional adoption, you know, if that's something that God puts on us, then we're not going to say no. But at this time, we do feel that our family is complete. We got Remy. We're going to see what God does.
Well, and it is a wonderful family, and he has blessed you. And Jenna, you've been such a help over the years, not only doing things like this and sharing your story and pictures with the NEDC audience or people who are just exploring embryo adoption. That's been really helpful. But you also did a very helpful blog while you were going through the process, and that has helped a whole lot of people, where you really explained and unpacked the process with the NEDC in detail. Is it, and I just haven't looked, is that blog still live?
It is still live right now. No promises for how long it's going to be live, but it is still live right now.
Okay. And if I was, is it open heart, home, womb? Is that right?
Yep. It's openhearthomewomb.com.
Okay. Yeah. And it really, it's so get to it while you still can. It's going to be a great service if you're just checking out embryo adoption with the NEDC. Jenna, thanks so much for joining me. Please say hello to Brian and Remy for me.
I will.
Thank you so much for listening to the Embryo Adoption Podcast. I hope you enjoyed learning more about this life-changing option for building a family. Hey, if you or someone you know could benefit from embryo adoption or donation, visit embryodonation.org to get started or just to find out more. Again, that's embryodonation.org. And don't forget to spread the word, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. Join me next time as we continue sharing inspirational stories of the embryo adoption journey. And until then, take care.